Now begin part two of broadcast number 659. This is July 23rd, and it is 1984. I put on a cassette here to make side two, and it keeps turning off. Last week, Betty Phillips at the Tape Center gave me a tape where the top was punched out, and that doesn't tape. That means we have to do this over later. Oh, that makes me so mad. Well, we'll go ahead with the broadcast, and I'll have to do this at home, but I can't figure out why it isn't recording. I'll give it one more try. There's something wrong with the tape. Okay, well, we'll go on with our broadcast, and I'll fight that tape. Last Monday, as I said, she had a hole punched into the tape, and I tried three different recorders and didn't catch on to what was happening and running around with these pieces of machinery, and it was really a bummer because I was ready to take all pieces of machinery in to be fixed. And then suddenly realized what the problem was. I called and they said there were holes in the tape. But we'll go back now, seriously, back to tape. This is 659, and it's July 23rd, 1984, and it's part two of the broadcast about terrorism in Nigeria. Time magazine has a story in Newsweek carried it, rooting out corruption, offering no apologies. The new leader presses his war against indiscipline. And this is about the Nigerian general. They had a military dictatorship that was put in very quietly in January of 1984, just New Year's Eve. And the people involved with one of the largest oil suppliers for Great Britain, and also they've been supplying Israel. The other Arab countries won't do it. This oil coup was very closely linked to Lord Peter Carrington and Henry Kissinger. Again, they have a finger in the oil dealings all around the world. But when this kidnapping charge took place, Time didn't even mention the Israelis. They talked about the intention to ship Mr. Diko back to Nigeria to go to court for taking profits off of rice deals, and left the Israelis out. Now, I know that the Vatican has been close to the Henry Luce Organization and Time magazine, but isn't it interesting how close these people are to Israel, that they delete from the story the Israeli people, and the Israeli people are important because they shouldn't be in a position of kidnapping and terrorism. And it seems to me that for a price, you can just get a few thugs and not require an anesthesiologist and a doctor who has a prominent position in Israel to be doing the job. There was an editorial in the New York Times, The Days of the Jackal. It says, there was a brazen operation last week. A political exile in London was kidnapped, drugged, and jammed into an air crate labeled diplomatic baggage. If the culprits were Colonel Gaddafi, and then it goes into Arafat, that would be bad. But terrorism is going everywhere, from Rangoon to Athens to Rome, Paris, and London. These are the days of the jackal, the very norms that civilized nations invented to resolve the disputes. Diplomatic courtesies and immunities are exploited for primitive vendettas. And it goes into the crating up of this particular person, Mr. Diko, and says, if Nigeria is guilty, its embassy will be closed, but Britain would still have to deal with Africa's most populous nation. Britain can expel any guilty diplomats, but they'll have to work with the government. And what if it turned out to include an arm of the Israeli government? What do you do then? And, of course, that's what it did go on and include. Now, just before this scene where the Israeli government, three Israeli people who are prominent in Israel were involved, there was a meeting June 25th where the title of the story is Schultz Charges the Soviets Foment Terrorism. And this meeting was at the Jonathan Institute, a private institute, a foundation in memory of Israeli Colonel Jonathan Netanyahu, I'll spell it Netanyahu, N-E-T-A-N-Y-A-H-U, who died during the Entebbe airport raid in Uganda. Again, that was set up by Frank Turpel and our Central Intelligence Agency and the offices where Mr. Robert Keith Gray worked with Edwin Wilson. This terrible terrorism that they're celebrating the anniversary of was really planned by the Central Intelligence Agency. At the conference was Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Arens. This is just weeks before this poor guy's going to be kidnapped, about 3 weeks before. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Jean Kirkpatrick, the woman who favored the Argentine government winning, the Argentine Nazis, they hadn't even changed democracy over the Falklands and war with Great Britain. FBI Director William Webster and Attorney General Designate Edwin Meese III. Now, these fine people, Kirkpatrick, Meese, Schultz, and Webster, are talking about international terrorism and having a conference June 25th. And about 14 days later, they find this exile in a crate in the London airport. Now, most of you read some of the details about this fellow, how he was kidnapped from his home and his bodyguard and family yelled that he was kidnapped. So they went to the various airports to see if there was anything suspicious. And the first indication that there may be highly trained mercenaries from Israel came out July the 7th. He was kidnapped on the 6th. And then on the 8th, there was a story, four facing kidnap charges. Two Israeli mercenaries could be working for the Mossad, Israel's intelligence service. So anyway, the first stories were, oh my, there's some Israelis. It's not Arafat. It's not Gaddafi. It's not Khomeini. Oh, it's these paid mercenaries like our soldiers of fortune that go down to Grenada and Lebanon all over the world that look like they're independent but work with the government. And 4 days later, July the 11th, the LA Times has a story. The Nigerian and three Israelis who are charged in the abduction are named, and one is Dr. Lev, L-E-V, then dash, A-R-I-E Shapiro, 46-year-old, and anesthetist at Sharon Hospital. He's in the reserve of an elite military unit, the kind that the Nazis set up, like our Green Berets and Special Forces, and he just spent several years involved with the Lebanon massacre. He was born in the Soviet Union and went to the medical hospital in Israel where he practices medicine, and his wife is a pediatrician, and they found Deco with medical equipment and syringes and a catheter and fluids given intravenously and four kinds of drugs. You may or may not know, methiopentone, diazepam, ketamine. They were all what they called stupefying drugs and needles in his body and tubes in him, and he was in this crate with a doctor. And the shocking thing to me is, why can't they just get, if you're going to kidnap, get the goon squad, why do they have to get him? Now, the doctor left Israel, and he had to tell them what he was doing. He left that hospital, and he said, I'm going to London for a patient to get medical treatment, and his excuse was to do a private anesthesia job in London. Fully trained physician, a medical officer in the Israeli army, serves in the reserves. The excuse in the Israeli newspaper was that he must have believed what he did was for the good of Israel. They wrote that off with that sentence. I want you to remember it, because what other excuse would Adolf Hitler give when he goes into Romania and Czechoslovakia and Poland and Yugoslavia and all those countries with the Blitzkrieg? He must have believed it was for the good of Israel. When you get to that position, that you trust these people for whatever position they have, like a doctor to heal or whatever, or even to heal at the time of battle, and you know that he's a sharpshooter and a kidnapper, I think it's disgusting. As I say, his wife is a pediatrician in Israel, and the newspaper in Israel had an editorial that said, Israelis are expected to guarantee integrity and good conduct to those holding an Israeli passport. And they were hard on him in one newspaper over there, that if there's suspected involvement in the kidnapped attempt carried out at the inspiration of the Nigerian government, and if no one brings the Nigerian government on the book, you can be sure everyone will be suspicious of the Israelis. Well, it didn't work that way. They're not suspicious. In addition to the doctor, a businessman by the name of Alexander Barak, 27 years old, he's the stepson of a wealthy diamond merchant. He makes frequent trips to Paris and London, supposed to be a nice guy, well off in Israel, travels abroad, a very cosmopolitan person who's caught in crate at airport. Another one is Masoud Abitol, 31 years old, M-E-S-S-O-U-D, Abitol. He uses an alias, Felix Abitol. He's an importer. He goes back and forth from France to Israel. He has clothing stores, a wife, family of three. The other doctor, two doctors, the husband and wife, have several children. A nice gentleman, and they go on trips. Now, this has been terribly hushed up since the first story came out. The colleagues of Dr. Shapiro tried to explain it. He didn't need the money, and he was soon to be the first director of a new intensive care unit set up for him and others in Israel, and he had just recently come from the United States where he took a three-month course of study. I'd love to know what doctors he was with or what hospitals where he was at in the United States. That would be a clue to what he was doing in that crate. But once more, the justification of what he was doing is identical to Adolf Hitler, and Zionism has been compared to Nazis, and it can't afford to be, and whenever it comes up in the news, I prefer to illustrate it and cite it for you rather than ignore it, because it's something we're going to have to live with and explain, and it is a fact that these things are happening. The New York Times, July the 12th, has the story, "Doctors, Israeli friends, and colleagues call him a model citizen." Now, isn't that like Joseph Mengele's with the string quartet at night, pointing his little finger, this one dies and this one works, or in this case, this one will go to trial or this one will be killed. He is a model. If he's a model, heaven help us, what's going on over there? It says the illicit activity would only be done for patriotic reasons. Dr. Shapiro is depicted by friends as serious and dedicated physician whose personal career was on the rise, and he would be an unlikely candidate for an international caper unless there is a reason to think that Israel benefits by it. He's a real square, and there's no reason in the world except for Zionism to be involved in the kidnapping. His soft spot was his readiness to do anything for the state. Does that sound like the play good in Mr. Taylor's script? His soft spot was his readiness to do anything for the state. If that washes with you, if that's okay with you, then any action by any government is okay if the state benefits. And I also want to cite an example of people having a quick illness and a terminal illness or two diagnoses at very crucial times in their career, and how the medical profession, people like this Dr. Shapiro, can give you a send-off or a send-away, because the intelligence system, the CIA, has infiltrated many, many parts of the medical profession. And I took issue with a doctor in Los Angeles about a year ago, who I think is a fool anyway, and we were talking about Ted Cummings of the Kitchen Cabinet, who works with Ronald Reagan, the only Jew in the cabinet. There was Holmes Tuttle, Earl Jorgensen, Justin Dart, William Wilson, and Alfred Bloomingdale. Well, Jorgensen is the one who has Mr. Wilson on his board while he's ambassador to the Vatican. Holmes Tuttle is around. Justin Dart is dead. Albert Bloomingdale is dead, and Ted Cummings is dead. But the only Jew that got an appointment was ambassador to Vienna, and he was over there just a few months, and all of a sudden he came home, and I mentioned on the program before, and he was sick. And I heard about it, Cedars-Sinai, it was one diagnosis, and when he died a short time after, it was something different. And I just happened to be there because one of my parents was sick at the time, and I know people who know them. But the point was that as soon as Ted Cummings is dead, in comes Helene von Dahn to go back to her hometown in Vienna, where Otto von Bolschring and a lot of the top Nazis came from and are at the present time. And she is groomed, the secretary Ronald Reagan, who worked for Otto von Bolschring, and the Nazi network, to go back to Vienna. It was too quick. When Ted Cummings died, he had just been in there a short time. But the point is that once you're sick and get into a hospital, people like that Dr. Shapiro can give you a little help along the way if they work with intelligence systems and have all these kinds of medicines. The only reason they knew about the tubes and all these different things that he had to give to this poor man who was almost dead was because they were caught with the bags and the medicines. But there are a lot of things administered in needles and pills that aren't labeled. And people who handle important personages such as that as a hospital have access to that body, and I'm not sure they all meet timely deaths. There's a lot of suspicion in the way that this particular went out, and I just mentioned it because doctors are used for tricky things that the average person doesn't think about. Now, in the remaining time, there's 15 minutes, I want to go into detail. I promised it last week, and I'll start now and then do more next week, on one article called The Anglo-Soviet Circles That Created Henry Kissinger, because so many of the news stories are important and tie in to this particular personality, Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer, and this article mentions them. Now, many of you asked me about Lyndon LaRouche and his publications like New Solidarity and Executive Intelligence Review. I'm going to share with you the high points of this article. It was published September 21st, 1982. That was an important time that we've gone over from June to September for the various people in the Reagan administration. And it was written by Scott Thompson. Now, I'm not going to say that this entire article is true. I'm not going to say it's not true. I have investigated different aspects of it in the past 2 years. And if you find fault with any particular point in it, call me up for the talk show part or write me letters and I'll put it on the air. If there's a statement here that isn't true, it may not have been proved yet, but these people may have done the work. But if you know there's an outright lie, I want you to tell me what you think it is, because I think you have to listen to the contents of what was written, not who brought the message. If you don't like the messenger, it doesn't always mean that the contents wasn't right. And in lieu of that article, and at the end of the article, he mentions SS Carl Wolff and Reinhard Gehlen and Otto Skorzeny and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger. I do want to mention that Carl Wolff died this week, July 18th. Now we have Walter Rauff and Carl Wolff, if Rauff died. He was one of the most important Nazis for the war for Adolf Hitler and for the American government after the war in bringing together Hitler's Gestapo, the Waffen-SS, the Liebersborn, the people that wanted the Thousand-Year Reich to go, the links of the Vatican to our Defense Department, our State Department. The obituary from the LA Times says, West Germany, Rosenheim, Carl Wolff, the Nazi SS general, was the man who established secret links with the United States and helped bring an early end of the war. He didn't do that, but he brought the Germans to our side. The war was just about over. Wolf was described by various people as a bureaucrat of death. He didn't die in any prison camp. He died in his home near Munich. He suffered a heart attack in 1971. He had been in the prison from 1962. He wasn't charged with war crimes, and he testified against his buddies. But all of a sudden, people recognized him as the guy running the roving gas camps and extermination vans and also working in Treblinka. While he was working with Alan Dulles of the OSS, he was running the extermination camps at Treblinka simultaneously. You'd think Alan would say, hey, what'd you do today? I didn't see you all day, or where you been for a few days. He had exterminated at least 300,000 Jews in Poland while he was working with our government officials in Switzerland. And so he went into jail in 1971. He had a very interesting heart attack whereby he just went home and saw his buddies. His name surfaced with Gerd Heidemann, the man who had the Hitler diaries this past year, and the reunions of all the top Nazis that were in the bunker with Hitler. His name, Mr. Carl Wolff, came up at that time. Now, he was the liaison during the war with Heinrich Himmler of the SS, that commander of the SS, the security detachment. And at the outbreak of World War II in 1939, he became the liaison officer between Himmler's SS, the dreaded SS, and Hitler's headquarters. So between the boss and the Gestapo, you can't be any higher. You're the middleman going between the two. In 1943, when the Nazis started to go underground, he went to Italy as SS commander and police chief. And in 1945, when the war was over and he knew it, he contacted Alan Dulles of the United States Office of OSS in Bern, Switzerland, and they had a meeting March 1945. There are books, Operation Sunrise, there's several books on that, one by Alan Dulles, and there are two books on the deals that they made and the untimely death of Roosevelt, who there's been some allegations he actually was blown up. He didn't want to go along with these people, and they were making deals. And when the war was over, Wolf surrendered to the United States, where they had salted away the names of their top Nazis and put them in work for the CIA, the OSS that became the CIA, and they were incorporated into our intelligence apparatus. So he was the liaison of Himmler, and there are allegations or beliefs that Himmler didn't die after the war and his body wasn't seen. And so he certainly had a top job from the early 30s up to the time of his death with all the old boys and staying together. Now, his name comes up in the article about Henry Kissinger and the Anglo-Soviet circles. There also is mentioned in the article with the Kissinger connections, the Oppenheimer family that were instrumental in taking Henry Kissinger from Germany to England before he went to the United States and went into military intelligence, and the family came to the United States. The person that this article describes, Scott Thompson, the family that it describes, is the Oppenheimer family. Now, in that new book, Endless Enemies, by Jonathan Quitney, an excellent book. There'll be parts that I'll be referring to over and over again. It's published by Congdon and Weed. It just came out, and he did many articles on the Newgenhan Bank. He writes for the Wall Street Journal. In this book, he talks about a Pierre Davister, D-A-V-I-S-T-E-R, a Belgian who ran a newspaper in the Congo in the 50s and stayed there, actually spying on Mobutu, and that's the time Patrice Lumumba was murdered. And Davister was an undercover agent for the Belgian government, and Mobutu was taking money from the Belgian state security. After they were independent, Belgium kept their control on Mobutu and had Lumumba killed. And in this book, page 52, he says, two influential players Davister remembers were Harry Oppenheimer, scion of the family that controlled the De Beers Diamond Syndicate, and thus the world diamond business since early in the century, in the early 1900s, and Oppenheimer, U.S. business associate Maurice Templesman, T-E-M-P-E-L-S-M-A-N. That's the fellow that Jackie Onassis has been living with and traveling with for the last at least 4 or 5 years. He has a wife and a family, but that's her constant companion is this Templesman. Oppenheimer was clearly tied to the South African government. South Africa was supporting Mobutu. They wanted to control the price of diamonds. And Templesman was tied to the American government. And this is an interesting section of this book of the Oppenheimers, because if that is the family that was in touch of Henry Kissinger, it makes that little entourage of Jackie Onassis and Prince Radziwill, her brother-in-law, and her sister's husband, and the people behind the murder of John Kennedy be a very close little entourage, because Henry Kissinger was working in the National Security Council with Alexander Haig, Fritz Kramer, waiting for Kennedy to be offed in that time period. Jackie was familiar with George de Morenschild, the Nazi spy who knew her and her mother, knew her when she was younger. John J. McCloy on the Warren Commission is one of the attorneys for Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis. Joe Kennedy, her father-in-law, was, until he died, a Knight of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. Aristotle Onassis, who she married after John Kennedy was killed, had his Argentine Monte Carlo yacht that went between Basil Zaharoff and the monarchy in Monte Carlo down to Argentina with the all-German crew, and she went on to an arrangement with him after John Kennedy was killed. And, of course, her sister, Jacqueline's sister, was close to Prince Radziwill, was tied with the I.G. Farben family. If you read The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben, you see the relationship of the Nazi Farbens and the Radziwills and how Robert Kennedy was coaxed not to break up their giant holdings after the war. And now Miss Jackie Onassis is spending many years with this particular gentleman who is a partner of Harry Oppenheimer, close with him and the Diamond Syndicate, this Maurice Templesman. Remember the broadcast I did 1 or 2 years ago, I forget about which one it was, on the death of the Pope, John the 23rd, and Patrice Lumumba and John Kennedy, and the removal of Khrushchev at that time period in the Soviet Union. And the links of those murders to the Belgian Congo, the CIA, and the Vatican. So that this particular reference in this new book, Endless Enemies, has some interesting context that I will be talking about frequently. As a matter of fact, this Mr. Templesman is described in the book. It says he had been shown around Africa by his father, Leon Templesman, a Belgian gem dealer. And, of course, the King of Belgium was a Knight of Malta also. They came to the United States either during World War II or right after it. This reminds me of Peter Drucker and Henry Kissinger and Mr. Charles Blue Dorn of Gulf and Western. This mass migration of people to this country just prior to the war, during it, or right after, that became multi-millionaires. It said they came to this country during the war or right after it and started the firm Leon Templesman and Son in 1946 when Maurice was 17. And the Templesman and the Oppenheimers were close with the various African rulers and worked together. And the Oppenheimer family is mentioned in the story on Henry Kissinger as bringing the Kissinger family to Great Britain and being responsible for their coming to the United States. So the Carl Wolf story in the news today, his name comes up in this article, and the Oppenheimers come out in the article, and they're in this new book. I thought I would mention them first before I get the details. And as much as I can do about the Anglo-Soviet circle, I just want to run this down with you and tell you the allegations. This is out of the Executive Intelligence Review. These are the statements as of September 1982. Henry Kissinger is not well-liked among people surrounding the Reagan circle. That was true. Former Secretary of State Kissinger is not appreciated by National Security Advisor William Clark. In June of 82, he was a pain in their neck. All of a sudden, when Bloomingdale is out and Vicky is dead, he is prominent and gets his appointments back. I'm just interjecting that part. These are the direct quotes. There are files around to prove that Henry Kissinger is the winning agent of foreign powers dedicated to weakening the United States. Now, this gist of this article is not that he's KGB or that his name is Bohr, which is mentioned once, but the foreign powers they're talking about are the Nazi powers, the Cliveden set in London, the Oppenheimers, the Rudolf Hess, the Nazi that flew over, that all of Kissinger's contacts are the far right-wing Nazi group that would want, like Karl Wolf and Himmler and Bormann and Mengele and Walter Rauff and all those, to continue the 1,000-year Reich. If there is proof that he is the winning agent of foreign powers, they say it's proof, but all you have to do is to see the way he acts. You don't have to see a piece of paper. It says, Henry Kissinger is acting president of the United States during the Nixon and Gerald Ford administrations, engaged in policy actions that verge or represented treason to the United States, prosecutable under the Nuremberg Code's definition of crimes against humanity. And they mention the International Black September group that he set up to kill Jewish leaders and trigger off a 1973 Mideast war and subsequent great oil hoax. Now, we know that he was involved in 1982 with the assassination attempt in London of Shlomo Argov. That was June the 4th, 1982, which was the excuse for Israel to have the massacre in Lebanon. And Henry Kissinger's protege, Alexander Haig, was given the green light for that. So this was written in 1982 and in September. And we know that this did happen. This is the way that June 4th incident took place. And Israel used one shooting. He lived and was seriously injured, but they use that to kill hundreds of other people. They cited the Kissinger Mideast diplomacy, the shuttle diplomacy of the Arab-Israeli war in 1973, where he created the oil hoax and the conditions for the fall of the major European heads of state. They referred to his genocide in Southeast Asia, where he prolonged the bloodshed with what he called the decent interval for peace negotiations, and used Thomas Enders to undermine the policies of Lon Nol in Cambodia, and supported Pol Pot, who was exterminating one half to one third the population. I don't have time, it's actually on the hour, but the Henry Kissinger story, his links to the Cecil Rhodes Group, the Round Table, the Council of Foreign Relations, the very kinds of groups mentioned in the book on the Illuminati and the Freemasons, I'll go into that next week, because Henry Kissinger is moving up and he does want that Hail to the Chief to really be the song and maybe change the Constitution and make him president of the United States. No matter who wins the elections, he will have a finger on those candidates for sure. And he is a primary problem. The other problem is to change administrations and get a change of faces if you want that. But behind every change, there will be Kissinger if we don't keep working on Henry Kissinger. Now, I'm going to take a one-week break on KAZU-FM because we go off the air now. Mae Brussel does, and we get some nice blues music. I'll be back with you next week. Study your newspapers. Thank you for the phone calls and letters. I'll be in touch with many of you during the week, and I'll be back with you 1 week from tonight.